today, don't buy now. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the Property Imperative Weekly to the 24th of November 2018, our digest of the latest finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. More volatility on the markets this week, more home price falls, and more revelations from the Royal Commission, which put the spotlight on poor culture in the banks and the regulators. And it's time to be very, very cautious, in my view. So let's get started. And by the way, if you value the content we produce, please do consider joining our Patreon program where you can support our ability to continue to make great content. Here is the link and it's in the comments below. Property listings are skyrocketing, according to CoreLogic, with an 11.6% rise in total listings over the last year nationally, but with a 17.4% rise in Sydney and a massive 19.3% rise in Melbourne. New listings are down, so property is sitting on the market for longer and longer, and vendor discounts are rising. Darwin units, for example, are seeing discounts of 14.64% and Perth units 10.5%, all signs of a stalling property market. Sydney has been one of the strongest markets for value growth over recent years. However, a big spike in listings and tighter credit conditions has made selling much more difficult. At one point in mid-2015, more than three quarters of properties sold for more than the original list price. Fast forward to the current market and 83.3% of properties are selling for less than the original list price, compared to a 13.3% selling above the list price. Sydney vendors are now discounting their asking prices by 7.3% on average in order to make a sale, compared with only 5.4% a year ago. Melbourne is currently seeing 76.3% of properties selling below the original list price, which is the highest share in the last 12 years. As recently as April this year, when values were rising at double-digit annual rates, 34.4% of properties were selling for less than the original list price. By comparison, today only 18.7% of properties have sold over the past 3 months for more than the original list price, and vendors are on average discounting their prices by 6.1% to make a sale. And CoreLogic's latest home price update revealed that their five city daily dwelling price index, which covers the five major capital city markets, declined another 0.27% last week, which is the biggest weekly decline of the past year. Prices fell across all the major markets, with Melbourne leading the way down, as expected, with a drop of 0.38%, Sydney down 0.31%, Perth down 0.29%, Adelaide down 0.04%, and Brisbane down 0.01%. The falls in Sydney, Melbourne and Perth this month are mounting, with Sydney down 0.91%, Melbourne 0.59% and Perth 0.63%. And remember that Perth has been in the doldrums for years. And while many property experts claimed that there were signs of a recovery in the West, this is just not true. Though Sydney and Melbourne prices are up compared with a couple of years back, the falls are likely to continue. The declines from the last peak are down 9% in Sydney, 5.4% in Melbourne, and 14.7% in Perth. ANZ said this week that the fall in Sydney housing prices is already the largest for many years. Prices are down 9% below the June 2017 peak, a larger correction than in 2010 to 11, 2008, 2004 to 5, 1994 to 95. And by the end of this month, the fall will be larger than the 9% fall in 1988 to 91. They now think housing prices in Sydney and Melbourne will fall around 15 to 20% from peak to trough. And they link the falls to tighter credit availability plus additional risks from changes to negative gearing and higher mortgage rates. And the combined capital city final auction clearance rates saw further weakening last week, with 42% of houses successful at auction, the lowest weighted average result since June 2012. The lower clearance rate was across a higher volume of auctions week on week, with 2,745 Capital City homes taken to market, increasing on the 2,386 held the week prior. Both volumes and clearance rates continue to trend lower each week this year relative to the same weeks last year. Melbourne's final clearance rate was recorded at 41.3% last week, making it the weakest result the city has seen since June 2012. And there were 1,401 homes taken to auction across Melbourne last week, increasing on the week prior when 1,127 auctions were held. And 1 year ago, a much higher 1,732 auctions were held, with 66.9% selling. Sydney's final auction clearance rate was recorded at 42.8% across 875 auctions last week, increasing slightly from 42.1% across the lower 844 auctions the previous week. And over the same week last year, 1,061 Sydney homes went to auction, with a clearance rate of 54.8%. Across the smaller auction markets, Adelaide returned the highest clearance rate of 59%, while Perth saw only 28% of homes successful at auction. And the combined capital cities are expected to see a slightly lower volume of auctions this week, with CoreLogic currently tracking 2,571 auctions, down from 2,745 auctions last week. Said, falling property prices triggered by tighter lending conditions are dominating Australian media headlines. The Australian residential mortgage-backed securities, or RMBS, sector, so far, they say, has been relatively resilient to pressure, with mortgage arrears remaining low and ratings performance stable. The RMBS sector is now facing more elevated risk than it was 12 months ago. Alongside high household debt and low wage growth, risks are emerging, such as lower seasonal levels in new transactions and increasing competition. Meantime, looking in the rearview mirror, Fitch Ratings said that their RMBS index 30-day plus arrears fell by 4 basis points quarter on quarter to 1.04% during the third quarter 2018. Fitch Ratings has observed a drop in third quarter arrears for the previous decade. They say that national dwelling prices continue to decline in the third quarter 18, led by falls in Melbourne, which dropped by 2.33% from the previous quarter, and Sydney down 2.11%. They say the price falls followed tighter lending standards, which restricted new loans and made refinancing more difficult, reducing demand in Australia's property market. The peak-to-trough decline in Sydney is now 8.2%, which is the second largest fall in the past 35 years. The largest fall was seen during the last recession in the early 1990s, when prices fell by 9.2%. RMBS transactions rated by Fitch continue to experience extremely low levels of realized losses and a rising lender's mortgage insurance payment ratio since the fourth quarter 2012. And excess spreads was sufficient to cover principal shortfalls on all transactions during the third quarter 2018. Now, all of this is starting to hit the broader economy now, as expected. Home price falls often lead broader economic falls by between 12 and 18 months. ANZ, for example, said momentum slowed further in the September quarter across most of Australia. All states and territories except Tasmania and the Northern Territory deaccelerated and recorded growth at below their trend rates. The loss of momentum demonstrated by the Statometer is consistent with their forecast that the Australian economy will grow at a year-end pace of 2.9% by the June quarter 2019, down from 3.4% in June this year. The slowing brings into doubt, they say, the 3.25% year-end growth forecast by the Reserve Bank for June 2019. Every state except Tasmania experienced a drag on momentum from the housing component of the index in the September quarter. The labour market also became less positive for all states and territories except Victoria and the Northern Territory. Trade was a highlight, with the mining states of Western Australia and Queensland recording stronger positive contributions as resource prices, export volumes, and the Aussie-US dollar exchange rate moved in their favour. In New South Wales and Victoria, which are less commodity intensive, would have large service sectors trade momentum also picked up, suggesting a further boost to tourism and education exports. They concluded that the tightening of credit market conditions remains a negative factor that, together with a poorer outlook for home prices, is pulling back demand in this important sector, especially in New South Wales and Victoria. And the six-month annualised growth rate in the Westpac Melbourne Institute leading index, which indicates the likely pace of economic activity relative to trend 3 to 9 months out into the future, fell from 0.41% in September to 0.08% in October. With this latest slowdown, the index growth rate continues to point to slowing momentum into the new year. Over the 7 months from October last year to April this year, the growth rate averaged 0.89%, and in the 6 months since April, the growth rate has averaged only 0.19%, a clear step down. So now to the Royal Commission. In Sydney this week, with most time spent on the CBA, CEO and Chairperson, and ASIC Chairperson. A few key areas came into focus, including broker remuneration, where CBA advocated a fixed fee model, frontline staff and senior executive remuneration, how the boards look at risk-related issues, often seemingly myopically, the question of vertical integration, especially relating to the question of advice versus sales in wealth management, and oversight and enforcement by regulators. The core issue was the question of misaligned incentives, which has led to the misconduct thrown into sharp relief in the inquiry. As a result, we would expect to see reform in the areas of broker commissions, frontline remuneration, and vertical integration, all significant and likely to crimp bank performance further. On brokers, CBA estimated that the average remuneration for a broker writing an average loan would fall from $6,627 to just $2,310, and that CBA would save around $197 million on a cumulative basis over 5 years. So some would say that they are talking their own book. But at very least, we expect trail commissions to go and a best interest obligation introduced. ASIC rightly copped flak, and as a result, we would expect them to be more proactive, demanding larger penalties, perhaps naming and shaming, and more litigation through the courts. Frankly, ASIC was too close to the big banks and has not met its regulatory obligations, and insufficient funding is not a valid excuse. The inquiry also questioned why ASIC needed to discuss the terms of infringement notices with banks before they're finalised. The parking inspector doesn't seek an indication from the person he's giving a parking fine to as to whether they will accept and pay it. He just does it. Why don't you just do that? Miss Orr asked. My understanding from the team is that if there is an unwillingness to accept an infringement notice, we would just go straight to court, Mr. Shipton said rather weakly. We will see more next week when the Melbourne banks and APRA are up. As the AFR put it, Kenneth Hayne looks like reshaping the governance of Australia's leading public companies. Based on the lines of inquiry pursued by the council assisting, the Hayne governance era looks something like this. Verbatim records of conversations held by boards and subcommittee members, longer board meetings, more extensive boardroom information packs, intensive director induction programs, more robust challenging of management, and increased employment of lawyers and accountants as non-executive directors. This would go hand in hand with the increased rules and regulations, such as those already pushed through Parliament covering bank remuneration. The new laws will give greater intervention powers to both ASIC and APRA, both of which will need significantly expanded budgets. Now, there's nothing here that suggests the lending tightening that we've seen will be reversed, which then puts the acid back on the RBA, APRA and the Treasury. As we discussed this week, Governor Lowe went public at CEDA with his concerns that banks were becoming too risk adverse. See our post, The People's Gold Will Not Be Kept Among the People. which also covered the governor's comments on Australia's gold. All the more reason for effective banking separation in my book. But the more immediate point is the fact that home prices are tightly locked to accelerating rates of credit growth. We call this the credit impulse. Even a slowing of the rate of credit growth is more than sufficient to lower home prices, precisely as we see now. So a fall to 5.2% or thereabouts, as reported by the RBA, is sufficient to drive prices lower. Most central bankers just do not understand this critical linkage, preferring to believe that as credit creates assets, increasing debt is a zero-sum game. This is just plain wrong. And we updated our scenarios, and you can watch the replay of our recent live stream where we discussed our thinking. The probability of more significant home price falls is rising, even in the smaller markets. Have no doubt this will have a significant impact on the broader economy, and GDP will fall. Locally, the markets were all over the place this week in volatile trading. The S&P ASX 100 rose 0.51% to 4,711, still reflecting recent lows on Friday. The ASX VIX eased a little on Friday, down 2.41%, but at 16.55 is still in fear territory. The banks did better on Friday, with the S&P ASX 200 financials up 1.08% to 5,731. AMP was up 1.65% to 246, still near the bottom. NZ was up 2.29% to 2634. Bank of Queensland was up 0.62% to 979. Bendigo was up 1.77% to 1040. CBA rose 0.95% on Friday to 7130. NAB was up 1.03% to 2448. Suncorp was up 0.67% to 1349. And Westpac was up 1.4% to 2604. Mortgage insurer Genworth was also up 0.91% to 221 and continues in the doldrums. Macquarie Group was up 0.29% to 114.53. The Australian dollar, US dollar slid 0.25% to 72.36, and it's still in its trading range, while the Bitcoin Aussie fell 10.38% to 5,297, and the Aussie spot gold rate fell 0.11% to 1,691. Stocks on Wall Street extended lower as another tumble in oil prices weighed on energy stocks. The Dow fell 0.73%, ending at 24,286, while the broader S&P 500 index lost 0.66% to 2,632. The tech-heavy Nasdaq composite was down 0.48% to 6,939. The volatility index rose 2.74% to 2,137 as the gyrations continued. Trading was light after the Thanksgiving break. The S&P 100 was down 0.84% to 1,161. The S&P 500 financials was down 0.91% to 430.5, signalling more weakness in the financial sector, while Goldman Sachs fell 1.86% to 189.02. Crude oil prices fell more than 7.7% as concerns persisted about a supply glut, down to 50.42. Dow Components ExxonMobil fell 2.7% and Chevron slumped 3.3%. Helping the sinking sentiment, of course, was the notion that President Donald Trump would successfully prevent OPEC from slashing production when the cartel meets in Vienna on December the 6th by using his no-sanctions Trump card for Saudi Arabia, which has admitted a premeditated murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, but denies any involvement by Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. The energy sector has lost 16.5% since the beginning of October, making it the worst performing S&P sector during the period and putting it on pace for the biggest two-month drop since September 2011. If we get clarity on any of these oil prices, trade war with China, and the Federal Reserve state of monetary policy tightening, we could go a long way towards making investors comfortable in investing in the market, one analyst said. Meanwhile, retail stocks were in focus with Black Friday sales underway. Discounts will continue through to Cyber Monday as investors will look to see if the companies can overcome an underwhelming retail earnings session. Walmart was up more than 1%, but Amazon dropped 0.96% to 1,502. Apple fell 2.54% to 172.20, and Intel fell 1.04% to 46.54. Google was also down 1.28% to 1,030. Cryptocurrency prices slumped on Friday, with Bitcoin falling to a new 14-month low, down 6.59% to 4,342. The digital currency was down more than 75% from its peak of 20,000 in 2017. Meanwhile, UK regulators warned investors against digital coin derivatives earlier this week. The Financial Conduct Authority, the FCA, could ban some crypto-based derivatives. Christopher Woolard, Executive Director of Strategy and Competition at the FCA, said at a crypto event in London, "We're concerned that retail consumers are being sold complex, volatile and often leveraged derivative products based on exchange tokens. Given this, the FCA will also consult on a prohibition of the sale to retail consumers of derivatives referencing certain types of crypto assets, for example, exchange tokens, including contracts for difference, options, futures, and transferable securities." The US dollar index was up 0.26% to 96.96, and the euro, US dollar, was down 0.61% to 1.13, and the British pound, US dollar, was down 0.47% to 1.28 on more Brexit weakness. Deutsche Bank was down again 0.84% to 8.18. And gold was down 0.37% to 1,223. All this may slow the Fed's drive towards higher rates, with the three-month rate down 0.02% to 2.41 and the 10-year rate down 0.48% to 3.05. That said, I expect another couple of rate hikes, which will put the cat among the pigeons in terms of corporate debt and funding costs more generally. We believe there will be further market volatility in the run-up to Christmas and more home price falls locally. Thus, we cannot think of any good reason at all why you would consider buying property in the current climate. Best to ignore the spruikers and the so-called great mortgage offers and bide your time. Now, those with a current mortgage should check to see if better refinance rates are available, but that will depend on your risk profile. But for some, there are savings to be made, although the banks may like to hope you are not smart enough to find them. And by the way, if you value the content we produce, please do consider joining our Patreon program, where you can support our ability to continue to make great content. The link is in the comments below. And as always, if you like what you've seen here today, please share and like the post and add a comment or question. I read them all. And if you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receive alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now by hitting that subscribe bell. And if you have already subscribed, many thanks. I really appreciate your support and participation. I'm Martin North, the principal analyst of Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.